you aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
Gwea ninda Louise Michelle, takaranto tleawi gado jojagi guige. My name is Michelle. I'm a Mi'kmaq from Nova Scotia and Métis from the Great Lakes. And I'm also known as the Birch Trail, and I run a jewelry business. And so I'm going to open up with the Strong Woman song. And the Strong Woman song is a song that came to the women that were in solitary confinement at Kingston Penitentiary. And it's an important song for me because when I made my first drum, it was a song that kept coming back and repeating in my head all the time. And it just kind of correlates because my aunt spent a lot of time in Kingston Penitentiary. So yeah, that's a little bit about Strong Woman song.
Hello to the strong witches of this missing witches coven. It's me, Amy, your auntie, your coven sister, your friend, whatever voice you need to hear right now. Back with Michelle, the Birch Trail, for part two of what I hope will be an ongoing series highlighting Indigenous voices. Before we dive in, I want to tell you what Toni Morrison told me. There is no time for despair, no place for self-pity. No need for silence, no room for fear. We speak, we write, we do language. That is how civilizations heal. So thanks to you for joining Michelle and me as we welcome Mi'kmaq artist, astrologer, and just all-around amazing human, Amanda Amour Lynx, for a conversation that we hope might contribute in some small way to the healing of our civilization.
Hi, everybody. My name is Amanda Amour Lynx, Dalhousie Aboxigan. I am Mi'kmaq First Nations, currently living in Toronto, Ontario, and raised and born in Montreal, Quebec. My heritage or my roots are from Mi'kmaq territory near Cape Breton in a place called Nyanza, close to Wagmatcook First Nation. I have ties there, but I've never physically been in that space. I identify as Two-Spirit. I like to make art, but also have a spiritual side too. And I guess that's kind of part of that lynx medicine. And I'm just excited to be in this space with you and having some conversation.
We're so excited to be here in this space with you and with Michelle, and it's so good to meet you and see your face. we've been typing, but this is our first facial contact, so it's good to see you in your beautiful pink room and your green hair.
I was just kind of joking that it's springtime, and because we're kind of cooped up in our houses, I wanted to bring like the look of the fresh growing grass and the spring buds, but bring it inside.
Nice. You nailed it. Michelle, you're rocking the green hair too.
I know, we've got the green hair squad.
I'm gonna have to get with it. So when Michelle and I were talking, I know that Michelle, there was a lot of stuff that you wanted to talk about in terms of astrology, and we just didn't get to it. And Amanda, you're an astrologer. I don't know if you want to jump in with how you got interested in astrology, or if you want to cut right to, like, here's what I saw in the chart today. I'll leave it to you.
Wow. So there's so much to say about astrology. I've been studying and avid about it. When my mom brought home a book when I was younger, I was around 12 years old, and she brought home a book called The Only Astrology Book You'll Ever Need by Joanna Martin Woolfolk. And she jokes to me that I stole that book from her, and it was so earmarked that it broken into three pieces, and it's a quite large book, and my curiosity just kind of snowballed from there. So that was quite some time ago. So I've been studying astrology and tarot and other mystical things for about 20 years. I started reading charts and helping others with it outside of my close friend circle quite recently. I feel like there was a period of time where I just kind of, you know, wanted to keep that close within my relationships, and I'm still kind of like working through that. Yes, because I'm still finding my way, but I just really love having the opportunity to have those conversations and being among people that have a way to share their own astrological musings with me. I get really excited when that happens, and I also like the ability to help others understand things that are going on a little bit better. In terms of what's going on right now, I feel like the astrological world out there, there's an abundance of astrologers that now have kind of taken over the internet, either through YouTube or Facebook, Instagram, that have been, you know, speculating on the year 2020 for quite some time, and it's a really exciting time to be in. I guess I just want to see how you want to have this conversation, if I should just kind of go forward, or if you wanted to ask some questions about it, or what you
In the last episode, a lot of our conversations weaved in and out of appropriation, but also what's happening currently with COVID. Mm-hmm. And just I had weird theories. I'm not gonna say conspiracy theories, because they're not conspiracy theories, just weird correlations and things I've noticed, with Saturn just recently went into Aquarius, and there's a lot of other big astrological events that are happening, and how we're in the year of the rat. And what brought the rat, what brought the plague was the rat. I just find it ironic that we're dealing with COVID in the year of the rat. And what was the other thing? The earth being angry because the whole thing with the Amazon burning, and we've burnt the world's lungs, and look what COVID attacks is our lungs. There's just so many different correlations and how it all converges at a certain point. You can't ignore it. So this is what we were kind of going on.
Really, I'm feeling that quite a lot as well. Saturn just went into Aquarius, and there's an interesting thing because Saturn was previously in the sign of Capricorn, and the traditional ruler of of Aquarius is also Saturn. So you have like these two octaves of energy or manifestations of what Saturn is. Saturn is generational, and it speaks to the structures of the world and the ways that we govern ourselves. And on a personal level, it also affects on a transpersonal level as well with societies at large. So we just left the time of Capricorn, and Capricorn looks at structure, stability, governance, and the nodes were in that spot as well, and the Cancer-Capricorn axis. Cancer relating to the personal and the womb and the emotional state and the need to nurture and care. And then Capricorn is looking at that paternalistic way of looking at regimes and government and the way that people rule over. It's kind of like this disciplinarian quality, and that's like doubly echoed in the signification of Saturn as well. But Aquarius is like this fresh energy, and it's just in its like baby phases right now. So it's probably at like 0 or 1 degrees, I think around 1 degree. And Aquarius looks at systems thinking, the collective, things that can't really be narrowed down to individuals, but more of a collective. So things that are represented by Aquarius are things like a stock market, things that have like no beginning or no end, where there are many people that are moving parts into a greater whole, and ways that these are a moving machine. There's also this idea of rebellion, but also the feeling of communal giving and reciprocity, and finding a balance in how those systems balance each other out. Mm. I definitely feel that echoed in the way that the earth is angry, and you can see this pattern shifting from like this extreme focus on capitalism and the pressures of like almost like the pressure that a diamond goes under to become shiny. It's just like almost oppressed to the point where the form is become so rigid that it cannot be moved. And I feel like in terms of people in the collective, we've kind of been forced into a very stuck position with the way that, you know, we don't have a shortage of resources, but there's been a mismanagement and a mishandling of what those resources are. And the mishandling of those resources has a lot to do with power and systems of power and who holds it. If Aquarius is the collective and people that, and it's a response to what happened in Capricorn, it's almost like the people want a humanitarian outcome from feeling so pressured into one spot, and those old ways won't do anymore. We're gonna shake things up and flip the switch. And often it takes something really uncomfortable to get somebody to change. I feel like we've gone through generation or years upon years of seeing horrible ecological injustices or injustices to groups of people that that have, you know, they've made headlines, and then people can go, oh, that's too bad. But the anger and the rising of that frustration is almost like, oh, somebody else will deal with that. And it's like, what will it take for people to actually act and see the atrocity? And like, it's until it affects everyone that act and move.
We were talking about that in the first part of the episode too, about like the blockades and how like we made such like headway in the news, and now that coronavirus is just like dominating everything. And you have people in places of privilege that can just be like, oh, okay, well, now I can drop it because it's not in like my main interests anymore. But there's still the collective hurt. And there's like a massive collective hurt. And I know like the spiritual community has been talking years about like how the shift in consciousness is going to come. Mm-hmm. You'll hear a lot of people talk about 5D and stuff. And we kind of giggled about that, like their first conversation. But it's just like, even I've been pulling out my tarot cards a lot recently, and I did a tarot reading on like the collective state. And my reading just like fell just in line with what the astrology is talking about and what the whole spiritual community has been talking about for years and years. We just didn't know how we were going to come to the shift and how like slow or quick it's going to go.
There's a thing I've been feeling, and it's this is kind of personal in nature, but I remember in the year 2012, there was a lot of conversation around that being the end of the calendar, and there will be a shift that begins from there. And looking from that moment onward, there's been a slow nagging frequency in the back of my head that's kind of like a rising anxiety. And I feel like the people that have been in my physical or personal circle have had these tests of fate or faith or challenges that have just been completely destabilizing or uprooting from what once was. But there is also this feeling of, it was almost like a mass gaslighting feeling, that there's an awareness rising that the status quo can no longer be as it was. Mm. And it feels like the lid just popped open and everything is like in plain sight with I guess like you can't tiptoe around it. The global pandemic is stopping everybody in their tracks.
Mm. Exactly.
And uncovering all of the lies that capitalism has told us. I like that term that you use, this sort of like mass gaslighting that happened over generations and generations and generations, where this totally unsustainable system just got normalized and normalized till we couldn't see any other way, until something crazy happened, something that, again, like you're saying, exposes the lies.
And it comes and goes in waves. Because, like, I've always correlated this to the white supremacy movement, because you have, like, it comes and goes in waves, but usually, like, the clapback is, like, we'll have, like, you know, the first wave of feminism, second wave, third wave, so on and so forth. And we've been feeling that, like, push, that, like, wave. And it's like white supremacy hasn't had this kind of like resurgence in a while. Mm-hmm. And it came hard and fast. And now we're like hitting that clapback again. And that's just, I'm excited. I know a lot of people are terrified, and that probably isn't very like comforting to them.
I'm excited too. And I feel like that mass gaslighting is part of it. I feel like I've been kind of saying, look at this issue, this isn't okay, somebody care about it. And because of the way that like systematic or structural oppression looks, it can't be tied down to one person, and these actions can happen on maybe small individual levels or short little bursts of collective actions. But the response is really disappointing, I think, doubly for as an Indigenous person that is seeing like land dispossession and injustice and mining and resource extraction and wanting settler friends to care, but also when you're looking at the inequality and vast situations outside of that too, whether it is other racial injustices or classism, ableism.
And it's like, I've heard, because I think about a lot of this recently, because yeah, we were talking about how people, it's just like, okay, I can pick it up and I don't care about it, because now the apocalypse is happening. This is like a word that's in everyone's mouth, that the apocalypse is happening. But the best thing I heard from an elder was that Indigenous peoples, we've already lived through the apocalypse and we've been recovering from it for like, I don't know, 500 years now. We've been there. It's already happened.
I think like the relief is coming from this, not to be egotistical, but the "see, I told you so" moment, where even people that are comfortable or in that like more privileged position are now being forced to look at that too.
It's true. It's like there's so much, like continuing from our like the first discussion that we just was released like yesterday or whatever. I listened to the episode already because I'm weird and need to make sure I didn't sound like an idiot. But it's just like we're always like pushed back as this like ancient people, and it's like, it's even like in science, like we try to get pushed back, like with the land bridge, and how like it's like it's just used like as an excuse to push the doctrine of like, oh, this was a barren land for us to discover. It's like, no, well, now science and like we're proof that we've been here for like tens of thousands of years, like before the land bridge anyways.
It's the doctrine of discovery is a huge lie.
It is. Oh my gosh.
And the doctrine of progress, I would also add to that, like how we have defined progress is, in my view, and I think in a lot of our listeners' view, completely like the product of this mass gaslighting.
Yeah, well, people like just want to ignore like we were talking about how our structures are so ancient and built on like centuries and generations of knowledge, but people like to shoot out the whole aliens, like, oh, it's all aliens. Like I had an example from that too, like, you know, the Easter Island. So when they're like, how did those guys get there? What did the people say? We walked them there. They walked there. They're like, oh yeah, they're crazy. Like, and now if people haven't seen it, you can Google it and you can see the video of the demonstration on how they literally made a pulley system to literally walk the guys there. It's just like so many examples of like, just like, not like science. Like I say it's scientific knowledge.
Oh, it absolutely is scientific knowledge.
You can't like diminish that.
No, no. I mean, but you know, capitalism and colonialism has done its best to diminish that and to demean that knowledge, you know, like we talked about. Now, Amanda, like you're also a visual artist, and I was looking at your art and I see a lot of interplay, intersection, total mélangement of like the personal healing and structural healing. Can you talk about the relationship between healing oneself and healing one's space?
You know, I like to think about what happens in a talking circle where everybody takes turns to facilitate active listening and like compassion for one another and to withhold our judgment. And in that turn taking, it helps us to understand different perspectives of one another. Or we can see ways to identify in someone else's story. I like storytelling as a tool for working through your own personal shit or hubris and the ways that that can be a transmutation of the energy that needs to be worked through, or wounds that need to be healed, whether that's trauma or grief, but then also on that same note, joy, like the act of creating is kind of like a channeling or a conduit of telling a story. And there's a way that you can bring something, a voice, or bring it to life, and in that it creates a vibration or a resonation because you are giving birth to it. And in that, there's an audience. So there's always this ambition that telling my story can potentially, on a private level or on a public level, allow somebody to feel more okay with having that experience themselves, or feeling less alone in something that happened to them. And I've been quite mindful of, I hope this isn't a bad word to say, but I use the word trauma porn. So there's like a way that artists often get exploited, or creatives get exploited by organizations or funders, or even just through like the artistic world, where people want to hear your trauma story to have some mass good that ticks off like diversity check boxes that they need, like to fulfill a certain quota of that. And the thing with sharing trauma is that it could be re-triggering and re-traumatizing to yourself. It unearths things, and they come out whether they're ready, whether you're ready or not. And it's like you're forced to look at, you're forced to look at it. And I think in that there's a responsibility to be conscientious on how that story is being told. And what that brings up is similar to like a counseling session that would happen in a safe space. But when you put it in a public space, it then becomes intellectual, open to intellectual critique, something that is deeply personal and can get ripped apart. So I feel like there's like nuances to that. You have the opportunity to speak to a pattern, speak to your own experience from the first person in order to tackle larger collective issues. And that can have a beneficial effect. It also has the effect to be exhausting if that, I guess, that ancestral or karmic work still needs to be done too.
Yeah, and I find that institutions don't particularly care about if that person is okay to be put in a spotlight like that, especially in trauma work. Like, recently I was approached by a CEGEP, and if, because CEGEP is a fantastical thing in Quebec, it's what you go to after high school, before university. I didn't have it in Ontario when I grew up, so I learned about it. So I got an email message from this CEGEP, and they say, hey, we would love to have you come in and host a beading workshop and just to talk about how it's great to reclaim your identity as an Indigenous woman. And I was like, okay, well, like, first off, did you look at my page? And I don't really like, beading's not my main thing that I do. And like, why just women? Like, there's so many questions here. So after probing quite a little bit, they're like, yeah, we're going to pay you well. It's going to be like $250 to do this workshop. It's going to be short and sweet. I'm like, okay, cool. So it turned out it was more focused in on like talking about Indigenous realities and trauma and to basically sensitize the students that would be there, and that the students wouldn't be Indigenous, that they would be settler kids because that CEGEP does not have an Indigenous population. And they have no idea of any kind of Indigenous realities. So this would be like ice breaking for them. And they wanted to set it up in their school in an open area where people can just walk by and pass and drop in. So
I an incredibly unsafe space and environment for you.
Yeah.
And especially because it was pitched as like beading workshop.
Yeah, I didn't find out that they just wanted, like, they didn't care about the beating. The most thing that they cared about was to sensitize their student population. They didn't even end up going with me and the other person they approached, which was my friend. They ended up going with two Inuit youth. And I hope I hope they did okay. Like, it's terrifying to think like them to be put on the spot like that. But this is just like a droplet in like how institutions utilize like trauma porn, as Amanda said.
To sensitize their student population.
There are so many ways that that could be done.
And like,
people employed to offer cultural sensitivity training that, you know, protects us from doing that painful, oftentimes re-traumatizing labor.
Well, yeah, it's so true. And it's like, you just go out and ask whoever, and you're not even being upfront about like what it involves. And I'm sorry, like $250 to sit there and explain to you why I'm a human being is not like, it's not my idea of a nice paycheck. I don't know. Like, oh, it's like so many people don't realize what they're doing is wrong either. I had a friend who had a job interview. Did Amy freeze?
I think so.
Am I frozen?
Yeah, you're frozen. I didn't know if you're okay. There you are.
Was I frozen like this?
You're like,
I'll keep moving so you know. Keep talking.
I had a friend who had a job interview at an Indigenous association, and I'm like, I'm not gonna give any details, but this is like a big Indigenous association. They like are quite a cornerstone of like Indigenous like media, if you want to say. Anyways, she got a job interview and then she used me as a token, but she didn't realize she was using me as a token. She's just like, I have a Native friend. This is Michelle. Do I qualify for the job now? It's like I got like, I, she's trying to explain it from the point as like, hey, I'm with the cool kids. I have a one Native friend, but like doesn't see the harm in it. So she got hired. Now she works there. And I actually know another Indigenous person that applied for that position and they didn't get it. Oh, academia and jobs and whatever.
Amanda, can you talk about decolonial soup?
Oh, decolonial soup is a project that was led by a friend of mine named Dana Prieto, who is an Argentinian visual artist and cultural worker. And what that intended, her project is called Critical Soup, and it engaged visual artists that whose artworks intersected with issues of food justice or land justice. Decolonial Soup was a workshop that we collaborated on with an artist and educator named Lisa Myers. And Lisa is First Nations and incredibly insightful and wise, and does work with food and uses that imagery a lot in her artwork. And it was a way for us to gather together to kind of demystify or create a safer space around the holiday of Thanksgiving. It was kind of like an Indigenous BIPOC feasting circle that we had in X Space Cultural Center, which is an art gallery in Toronto. And we made a soup, and in the sharing of the soup, we talked about the harvesting and tradition and protocol of wild rice, and is like using traditional ways of using our food, like having berries as well as part of a food staple, and that be part of our soup dish, while we talked about what the real Thanksgiving was intentionally about, what the harvest was, and also a kind of danced around the Thanksgiving address while also acknowledging that it's a big teaching to carry in Indigenous culture, that we made space for the Thanksgiving address but did it in our own way, while looking at the intersecting identities in the room as well and who was impacted by colonization. It's a holiday of colonization, and the celebration can be reclaimed in a way that goes back to traditional Indigenous ways of looking at the change of season. But then additionally, you look at the pagan cycle of the year as well, as this idea of harvest and preparing for the next season to change, and what those lessons and teachings are as well.
I think I saw that you used the word ethnobotany. Can you kind of talk about that? I really was intrigued by this word, and I'd like to hear what you have to say about it.
I look up to a lot of people who study herbalism, and also people that have acquired plant knowledge. I use the word ethnobotany to nod to the expertise and skill it takes to learn and study plants on a very personal level, knowing that I'm a baby in only beginning to generate that vocabulary for myself. But the ethno part of it is relating to story, and botany is relating to plants. So it's the story of plants. And if you look into the linguistic nature of the naming of plants in various Indigenous languages, you'll see that story is embedded within the naming of plants that hearken specifically to cycles, to place, to land, to animal relations, but people relations as well, and knowing the times of year in which, or the purpose that is connected to those stories. So I'm very inspired by authors like Robin Wall Kimmerer, who's written Braiding Sweetgrass, who has fused the Western ideologies or of plant knowledge, but mixes it with her Potawatomi teachings and her personal storytelling as well. And also there's a book called Plants Have So Much to Say, All We Have to Do is Ask. It's by somebody named Wendy McCoon's Genius, and they're Anishinaabe Botanical Teachings. Christy Belcour also has written a book that looks into the, you know, the epistemologies associated with medicinal plants and the translations of what the words represent. There's some really beautiful ones, what I know, and I don't want to misspeak out of my own culture, but I'm grateful to being on Anishinaabe territory and the gratitude I have from being given teachings from here while also being Ilnu. But they have a plant that translates to squirrel or squirrel tail, and it's the yarrow plant, and the leaves of the plant look very similar to the way that the tail of a squirrel moves, and if you move it, it is very feathery and moves in that way. And so you'll see that there are these teachings that come within understanding language and the oral nature of cultural transmission.
Have you seen, Christy, the big version of the book by Christy Belcourt with all like the, like, I guess, do they have like all the plant illustrations or like the beaded ones? It's so gorgeous.
Sorry, can you say the name of that book again? I haven't heard of it. You said Christy Belcour, I think?
Christy Belcour is an author and a visual artist. And she's mostly known for her artworks, but also is doing a lot of work right now around land justice issues right now with the Wet'suwet'en.
Was the book called Plant Medicine the big one, I think, or something like that?
Christy Belcour's book?
Yeah.
That one is called Medicines to Help Us.
There we go, Medicines to Help Us.
And I'll put all links to all of these books that we've mentioned in the show notes. Obviously, listeners, don't worry. You don't have to go scrambling for your pens. You can just click on the show notes. I'm the one scrambling for the pen, so you don't have to. So I'll put this to both of you. Obviously, plants, stories, they all have cycles. People, we all have cycles. So how does studying these cycles, be they planetary cycles or plant cycles, how does this help us to move forward in ourselves, in our society? Again, I have a hard time with the personal and the political. To me, there's not too much of a separation. So how does studying these phases help us to evolve? I'll use that word.
Well, we see a lot of things happen throughout history, and we would have been like, well, if they would have learned from the last time, it would have been avoided this time around.
Very, very practical.
And like, just like as a tarot card reader, because I've been reading tarot for like 20 years now, every person's tarot card readings, especially when you have like clients that you are averaging, like, I guess, like, on a semi-daily, well, not daily, like, monthly, yearly, whatever. Everything comes and goes in cycles. Everything is a cycle, and it's always, like, a mirror. We're always put up this mirror in front of our, like, right in front of us. And we have to, like, learn from it. And if we can't, like, face it and learn from it, we won't go past the next stage.
I've been thinking a lot about the interrelatedness of
what is in the ground and what's in the sky. There's something that you wrote or that you shared recently that looked at the patterns in astrology that are repeating right now.
Yeah, because
there have been correlations to the planetary placements right now that relate back to World War One, that relate back to the Depression and like the Industrial Age and these types of things. And although the configurations or the cycles are like a Rubik's Cube, we can always look at where those planets were before in the last cycle to project the patterns in what can happen from repeating this lesson over again, or seeing the new variables as a shifting wheel of time.
Mm-hmm. I forget what was conjunct, but I know it had a lot to do when we were talking about Saturn in Aquarius, but then there was another transit that happened recently. And it's all like the last time was when we were getting out of the Great Depression with the like slavery movements, a lot of like different social movements. So yeah, it's just like there's another thing that just repeats like and repeats. It's interesting how everything's like, and we're in cycles, like if you have a uterus, you're in a cycle of some kind, just like the moon's in a cycle. Our lives are in cycles.
And so where does the healing come? There's the observation, the recognition, and then how do we get to the healing from the observation and recognition?
I feel like that's a really interesting question. We have individual lessons. I don't want to be an authority on what people's, you know, epistemologies or ideologies are, but the belief in my head is that we incarnate into like our birth charts are a blueprint of the lessons that we signed up for, whether it feels just or not. There are some things that, you know, you would never wish upon yourself to experience, but there is a greater pattern in it. And in that, it includes who we meet and who our family is, or whether it's a soul family or a, you know, biological family or a group that we've met time and time again. And astrology can show us the patterns in our behavior, can show us the patterns in what, or bring awareness to what our gifts are and what our challenges are. And it's our choice whether we want to look at it. And it's also subject to the influences of what influences us, to address or give us the impetus to resolve or look at those challenges in a new way. When you look at astrological transits, there's a planet that causes a relationship to something that is a psychological or a physical pattern in somebody's psyche or in their body or whatever it is on the wheel of life. And it's an opportunity that when that part gets activated, it's like a chemistry where something shows us a way. And this could be through forces that push us or rupture us into a force change, or they could be gentler that help us to see things in a more introspective way. And there's infinite variables of what that could be. And we have this on an individual level, but astrology is also so complex that there can be astrology for your cat. There could be astrology for a country. There's astrology for the collective. There's also something called horary astrology, which is the moment someone asks a question. When the thought goes into the universe, it creates a ripple in that vibration that can then be answered by the chart that's rectified at that time.
So when you're looking at all of these cycles that are happening, they're all in a complex relationship by what it's being affected by and the ways that we choose to perceive that or address it or what tools we have at that time to find that awareness or make those changes lest the cycles repeat. But this also happens on a collective level.
I guess in terms of like healing, you can like separate that because like healing happens on like an individual level. I can only talk about that experience from my own, like in my own individual healing. Like if I was the same person I was when I was a teenager, oh my gosh, no way. Like there's so much like internalized racism I dealt with. And that's just based off of like different factors in my own family and having like people that have been extremely racist in my own family. And if we want to talk about in terms of healing and identifying that in yourself, you just see where you feel uncomfortable, where you feel different, and then you explore it. And it's like, I've always felt different like my whole life. And since like reclaiming more of my indigeneity, I've realized like there's a lot of like things that have been put in place in my life that just blocked and denied that and caused a lot of internalized racism. And like, funny, because Amanda read my natal chart, and I definitely recommend Amanda. And it's like, I had Sagittarius in both Saturn and Uranus in like the fourth house or something. And it was like, I have like a very, very strict planet in my, like in my house where it would define like my home life, basically. I have a very strict planet and a very like different wonky planet. And that like definitely, it like explains like the two aspects of my family. Like you have like one side of my family that's so like open and accepting of who I am and what I do, and another part that's like so restrictive and changing and like so set in a colonial bias. And that's just on an individual level. Then we move to the collective healing, the community healing. Like, I hope that made sense. Or going like right into the woo for this, like this episode, right? Like,
well, you actually made me think of a quote from Amanda's website that I really wanted to read and get both of your thoughts on. So I'll go to that. Amanda, you wrote, spirituality, connection, and community are at the root of wellness. And I think that that speaks to what you were talking about, Michelle, even just recognizing your own ancestral knowledge and sort of accepting it and your own, just in terms of your personal healing and not this great global healing that all us witches are always trying to set our minds to. But I'll read the quote again, and then Amanda, I'll let you speak to it first, maybe since you wrote it, seems fair. Spirituality, connection, and community are at the root of wellness.
There is a rule of life, or the religion of many Indigenous nations, and we call it the medicine wheel, that looks into the synthesis of cycles, and it's like a compass that's north, east, south, and west. But it also represents the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, and the mental. And they also, like, it's deep, and everyone has their own teachings with it, and it's been contextualized in so many different ways, and it varies from community to community as well. But the versatility of it is that it looks at relationships as holistic. So you're not an individual unto yourself, but is often touted in Western society, where if you have an emotional problem, you're left to yourself to solve it. If you're poor, you need to get a job, this type of mentality. If you've done a crime, you need to be incarcerated, whereas Indigenous ways of thinking and looking sees the stories of what has happened in the past, what's happening in the present, what's happening in the future as a fusion or a paradigm that's occurring and existing across dimensions. I hope I don't do it injustice by speaking so openly about it, but in addition to that, we also look at, you know, who are, what our own life cycles. So you have infancy, you have youth and adulthood, and then being an elder, and they all are in dialogue with each other. Nothing exists within a vacuum. There is always a cause to what the wound is that goes deeper than vilifying the person that has done the harm. There's always something that can be healed from that, looking at it in a collective. Kathy Absalon writes a lot about holism with the word, with the letter W. So like whole of a person consists of a circle of cycles in nature, but also the cycles in our relationships with one another. So when I say connection, what happens when we become mentally ill is we feel disconnected from that greater rhythm, that connection to our own inner voice, the internal guidance, and also to our guides, our ancestors, to our relatives, to our families, or even the fostering healthy friendships and relationships. It requires us to have a healthy relationship with our bodies and how we nurture them on a physical level, as well as that mental, spiritual, and emotional.
I just think about how there's no hierarchy in a medicine wheel either.
Mm-hmm. We all have something to give, and we all have a part in restoring justice.
Can you say that one more time for the people in the back row?
We're all responsible for each other. We need to take care of each other. It's not just everyone out for themselves.
I believe that. Let's have some victory porn. In the dawning of the age of Aquarius, what do you foresee as a great victory that's upon us? Whether personally or globally or community, what's a victory that you foresee coming?
Oh man, the Indigenous resurgence that's been happening since the 90s, that has given me hope. And we spoke about it a bit last in the first part, about pan-indigeneity. Mm-hmm. There's a whole pan-indigenous movement. That's where the term Two-Spirit came out of. It was an Ojibwe term, and it's a pan-indigenous term too that can be used. And then what was the other? There's something else that I was trying to think of, and then it just poof. Yeah, even the medicine wheel, because the medicine wheel isn't, all the nations don't magically have that exact medicine wheel.
Mm-hmm.
It's all been adapted.
The Mi'kmaq directions are different than the Anishinaabe directions.
Yeah, and even the colors are different. Yeah.
There is a unifying thread of the view, but you're not Indigenous, you are from a nation. When you identify, you don't want to be called native. You want to be called from the nation you belong to. But also giving sensitivity to what has been lost at the hands of colonialism and people's journeys to the violent journey that's caused people to lose that connection as well.
Mm-hmm. And so many of us are mixed and have so many different complicated identities. Some of us have more than one nation. Some of us have both Indigenous nations and settler heritage as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in a time of such great let's call it potential to keep the victory porn thing going.
We love victory porn.
Yeah. I'm excited about a few things that forward to. And if we're tying it back to astrology, in addition to Saturn going into Aquarius, there's a relationship with Aquarius's ruler, Uranus, being in the sign of Taurus right now. It's been in Aries for about 7 years, and now we're going into another 7-year cycle. 7 years is very significant in indigenous ways of looking at things as well. But we left a time of Aries, so this initiation, this rite of the individual, and now we're looking at the themes of Taurus, which look around themes like agriculture and the shifting of regimes, and looking at more Aquarian ages of looking at how we want our societies to be, wanting a fairer society, wanting equality. And I don't want to make presumptions about that, because we're still in this really dark time where you're seeing the intensities of the power imbalances. But I can already see a shift from looking at themes of war or themes of capitalism and the youth of the sign of Aries, now going into a return to the land, or a return to, I think Taurus is also, it also rules currency. So what is our currency? What's a social currency? If Aquarius is socialism or these ideas of the collective consciousness, what is our social capital? What is a value? And we're restructuring and changing what that looks like, and returning to some themes of, is the power back to the people? Is it, whereas before we had this notion of power only belonging to one person ruling over us. I'm very excited to see that change, because these old farts need to go.
We love to shake it up. Everything needs shaken up, for sure.
And the value system's connected to that too. Like, in addition to what we were talking about around ethnobotany, there's this idea that science is devoid of spirit. And because of that, we have a divide from our heart and our head. There's a divide in how we care for each other, and there's a divide in systems like medicine and how we administer medicine in the West, because we are looking at a subject as an individual and not as a sum of collective parts, both in plant but also in looking at, like, you know, like psychotropic or like psychological, like mental health drugs as well, looking at the mind as a wound that needs to be, or a disease that needs to be cured, or the body having a wound that needs to be cured, not rejecting the advances of medicine. I'm saying that a way, like they're in conversation with each other, and they always have been. And that's the roots of what alchemy was at one point. It was science and magic once linked together. And in that conversation, you have these articles, and they're quite angering, where scientists says, scientists prove that trees talk to each other with an underground network of roots. And we're like, no shit.
We told you that a while ago. Fuck. Ah.
So there are ways in which Western thought catches up with us, but because of things like the doctrine of discovery and this idea that one must conquer over the other, the suppression of, you know, pagan belief systems or land-based belief systems being inferior or threatening or scary to people that don't have that occult knowledge or that connection in that same way, because they're experiencing the wounds of their own trauma with the land and that transferring over with like plagues and diseases, which brings it back full circle.
And it's amazing. You shared something in your stories like a day or two ago about a collective meditation.
Oh, yeah.
Showing up on a scale. So like science is kind of catching up. I forget like exactly.
Yeah, that was called.
It was so interesting because you could see like the collective meditation on this like graph. Like in.
It was just called the Schumann resonance. And then I'm not going to claim to be a scientist or really know my shit in that regard. So I thought it was cool to see the great spike in that moment that the global meditation was occurring. But if you look and Google it, it talks about the ionosphere and like the math of radio frequencies and electromagnetic fields, and they can say it in much more articulate way than me. I was just curious because it happened upon my daily scroll. So
what happened was there was someone set up a global meditation and then someone measured like the electromagnetic impulses at that time during the day, and they, okay, well, I'll put it in the show notes for you. But yeah, that's a very obvious movement.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I just love how like science just like kind of comes up and they're like, oh, hey, yeah, like the trees talk to each other under the root system. Like, oh, smudging actually clears the air. Like sage clears the air. Like, wow. It's about time, man. Although I got into an argument once because like someone shared one of these articles, and I'm just like, I love it when like science just comes back and it's like, hey, indigenous knowledge is right, and someone's like, oh, we don't need to go back to the dirty times. It's like, sure.
Even that like way of framing that, like that perspective, dirty times,
I know, right?
We look at, like, it's so often framed as being a dark age, but when you look at nations that don't use the same types of resources as us, we look at them as impoverished countries, but their levels of social connection are much higher. Their levels of mental wellness are higher because they have those relationships.
Yeah. I like how Marisa said it last time was, you shouldn't have pooped in the water. It was going fine until you pooped in the water.
So I'll ask you both, how are you maintaining your mental health in these extraordinary circumstances that we're under right now?
I want to be hope, like... I don't want to sound like I'm always negative, but it's just like, like I feel like my like when you're used to like oppression and trauma, it's not, this has been fine. This has been a cakewalk. Like, I don't know. I've been doing a lot of live streaming. I love that everyone is sharing knowledge. There seems to, like, makers are out there freely sharing things and don't seem to care about competition anymore, which is awesome because competition doesn't exist.
Love that.
I'm going to tell you, like, in business, it doesn't, like, yeah. Like, people are talking to each other families are stuck at home. They got to work out their shit. There's going to be a baby boom, but there's also going to be a huge divorce boom.
The divorce boom. And do either of you have any like meditations or rituals or grounding practices that you're doing?
I baked spells.
Mm.
So I know that it's very distracting time right now. Like a lot of people are being forced to deal with things that like we were talking about, like food security, like they've never dealt with food security for the first time. And you have people like, it's like, oh, like people don't look at me weird when I wash all my Ziploc bags now. So
yeah, this is just how my depression era grandma used to do it. This is how I've been raised my entire life. So
that's how I was raised.
Yeah.
So I just like when you don't have the mental space, the capacity, or if you're just like really not into ceremony stuff, because some people I know, like when my roommate will laugh his ass off if I just started, you know, calling in the god and goddess. So we just like bake our intentions, and then that's a cool way. That's a really good way to do that. And I've been doing tarot card readings.
Yeah.
Baking is one of my favorite alchemies for sure. How about you, Amanda? Have you taken on any particular like ritual or meditation or practice during these weird times?
I feel quite strangely, and I think I've come out of a time, or I'm in that time and seeing it in a new way, of deep, intense trauma and, I guess you call it, ego death. And this idea of social isolation as someone who lives with a disability and chronic illness and PTSD, that has been my new normal for half a decade already, of really monitoring what comes in and outside of my body and who comes into my circle, what comes out of my circle, what I give, the resources, the vessel or the cup that you have to give to others, and how you refill it. And it's forced me to be more cautious with what I consume. I think at the height of my mental illness related to trauma, I quit drinking. I was like social drinker, but I realized that in that moment, it was a harm reduction for me. If there is this intense emergence of these traumatized behaviors coming out of me, I have to do my part to take care of my body in a way that, you know, I have that mental space and faculty to process it. So I felt some grief around the life I had that didn't consider the time of day that I would go outside, or the social environments I would be in and the sensory disturbances within those environments. And learning healthy boundaries with people and psychic boundaries with people as well who also need help, and learning how to really pinpoint what in my energy belongs to me and what belongs to others. I don't mean for this to be a segue, but this was a very good preparation for not going outside too much or not socializing too much, because the amount of supports that I need to do what people do on a normal basis require a lot extra considerations materially or socially, like having a buddy system or a self-care system in place after exerting spoons or energy that I need to restore and recharge and get back. That being said, I feel like I think a lot of people are struggling right now, but I haven't been crying and I haven't been devastated or deeply depressed. I'm just grateful for the resources that I have and the love that's around me in my life, knowing that I worked hard to
rebuild those in a place where I can sustain what I have with the relationships or resources around me. But I also like see it as an opportunity to give right now. And I feel like I've seen a few Instagram stories or infographics that talk about how people who live with disability are now being seen as these experts in...
I think we're wrapping up soon. We should be wrapping up soon.
These experts in how to manage with not having enough resources to get by, or how to manage mental health problems. And it's a strange role reversal right now.
You're used to this. Maybe you could give us some tips on yeah, you're invited to the beading workshop. That's what that sounds like to me, right?
I feel also that accessibility rights have changed as a result of people now taking seriously the health and mental health of individuals that require accommodations like working remotely or having some other supports in place. And now introverts or people that have mobility issues can now be invited to the party as well. I felt more socially connected in the last month than I have in the last year. That's kind of funny.
It is. I have noticed, like, I'm a hermit who lives in the woods. This is like my baseline operations, no matter what's going on in the rest of the world. But because everybody's sort of like searching more to make these connections, because they're not necessarily going out to their jobs. Those of you who are going to your jobs, thank you. I'm so sorry that you have to carry the weight of our society on your minimum wage backs, and we're going to do everything we can to change that going forward. But yeah, the people who are stuck at home are reaching out to, I've spoken to people that I haven't spoke to in a long time, or friends that, you know, we were, you know, just time goes by, but now we're reaching back out, and we're all getting these Zoom accounts, and we're having these parties that, like you're saying, people, you know, might not have been able to access before for one reason or another, either because your anxiety level prevents you from leaving the house, or because you have a physical disability, or because, you know, like you and I, you have a chronic illness and you're just too tired to get in a taxi and get, but now you can be at the housewarming party. You can be at the, you know, you can have dinner with your friends without leaving the house. That's definitely been a silver lining for me, is that people are getting more into this.
We just have to make sure it stays going forward. You have so many people in the disabled community going, well, it's so easy now, when I've been asking for like years to be able to work from home.
Yeah, a friend of mine, her husband was petitioning his bosses for years, and finally they relented, like maybe last fall, and they were like, okay, you can do 2 days a week from home. Well, and now, of course, they're grateful to him that he basically like forced them to set up this infrastructure. And again, hopefully now people who don't have the luxury of choice now have these infrastructures in place.
Yeah, we're being forced to care about our community. Because that's what's been missing. We have so much like this like self-care, but we like always forget about community care. And community care is like so important. And it's so refreshing to hear like large news media like talk about things like universal income. It's insane to hear like in the States, like CNN and these kinds of places talking about, our system is not set up socially to help people, and this needs to change. And I'm like, wow, like
you think? And all of us were like, aha, for 10 years we've been screaming ourselves hoarse, 20, 30, 40 years I've been going to these protests. And yeah, all it took, yeah. But I mean,
it took
again,
one, you know, virus.
And I'm the same in my personal life. Like, I need an ass kicking before I'll make a change. You know, I'm a lazy be. And until life comes and is like, you need to make this change right now. Like, I ain't doing it. So I sympathize with society and humanity in that way. But like, this is the ass kicking. The thing is, like, when I get the ass kicking, I take it and I take it as the lesson. And that's what we need to, not be angry that we got our ass kicked. We need to get up and train for the next battle, right?
It is tough love. Tough love for sure.
I also want to acknowledge, like, we have a perspective of this happening on a mass level, and that is also true, but there's also, like, some other things at play. There's the racial inequity that is impacting who has healthcare access and who doesn't, and when you look at disability and race, you're seeing this direct correlation to who has internet access to remain connected, but also who is dying at the hands of a failing healthcare system.
Yeah, someone posted to statistics of the percentages, and it was an American statistic, mm-hmm. but it's like you have the black male population, which is like what, 23% in the area that this was posted for. And their death rate
Chicago.
Was 80%.
I think 80%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're still looking at, like, what about remote communities? Like, our indigenous communities on reserve don't have the same resources to remain connected.
No. And we spoke about that Quebec couple last time, the one that flew to the remote community. I have more of the story. Did you know that this couple sold all their possessions? They sold all of their possessions. They just left. And I think they didn't stay there. It wasn't 2 weeks, it was 2 days.
Because the magical Northern First Nations people were gonna save them from everything
with
a parent
or something. Yeah. Like,
they wanted to be hunter gatherers. They wanted to go live off the land. That's like, what? The one thing that terrifies me in all this, because we know that the virus has hit Africa. And now the rate is, like, jumping, like, the continent of Africa. The rate is, like, through the roof way faster than any of the other countries, at least last time that I saw. It's hit the Navajo Nation now. And it's hit Stony Ridge, I think. Anyways, so now they're hitting the indigenous communities. And it's just, like, I'm terrified for our elders. And our knowledge keepers and all the work that we've done, like, in trying to preserve this. That's, like, the one thing that's been terrifying me.
Yeah, we have to protect these, like, very valuable keepers of this knowledge and all knowledge. I mean, people are just going around willy-nilly, and some people don't have a choice, again. But if you do have a choice, please make the right choice. If you refuse to think about your own health, think about the potential that you are asymptomatic and you are carrying this virus to an elder.
And did you hear about there was a tiger at the Bronx Zoo that's been diagnosed now? There was a study that was out, but it's not peer-reviewed or anything, but it came out of China about how it's can be in cats and ferrets. And I own both cats and ferrets and a dog. And ferrets normally catch can catch the common cold and flu. They're actually one of the animals that's used to test cough syrups. Because cats and ferrets have similar respiratory systems to us. So it's like sad cute, because you can get a cold and I can give it to my ferret and she can give it to me, and she gets like sick for 3 weeks and has the whole little fever and everything. So if you are a ferret owner, watch your ferret, baby.
Pay extra attention.
Wash your hands.
So, Michelle, I'm going to ask Amanda for some final thoughts while you prepare to sing us out. Yeah, do what you need to.
Do you want
to pull a card first? Yes.
I want to pull a card for you, Amy. I want to pull a card for you.
Thank you.
Because we've been playing like cards recently as a means to cope.
It's a good means to cope.
And I'm using the Threads of Fate deck. And it's this really gorgeous like shadow deck. And there's
Wow. It's like gold embossed. Like the designs are shiny.
I'll send you a picture after of your cards.
Thank you.
So I pulled the Sovereign for you. And I'm going to pull it up. And then after I have a question card, and that's going to be like a question for us to ponder. And it's a really cool oracle deck because like rather than giving you like an answer, it gives you a question.
And we love that.
It's written by my friend Marisa. So here, the Sovereign. The Sovereign card invites us to activate the leader, visionary, and enthusiast within us. It is a time to welcome in passion and fire while creating structure that allows for you to nurture your dreams. Sovereign creates a container which allows growth for themselves and others. They approach situations with a no bullshit attitude and may come across as harsh to some people.
That's that tough love we were talking about.
I know, right? Their strong boundaries and opinions may even be intimidating to others, but in reality, it is their way of nurturing. They have no interest in appeasing others. Simply to keep them comfortable, they'll continue to push those around them so they can grow. So the Sovereign also calls for us to create structure. We're talking about all those structures too.
Better structures.
From a place of structure, the Sovereign knows that life runs more smoothly, allowing for the manifestation of true success, security, and happiness. So I'm going to leave with a question and then I'll let Amanda close up. Oh, that one flew out.
Oh, I love when one flies out of the deck.
What is the gift in this?
Ooh, I've been reading and writing about shadow work lately, so this is perfect for me, like desperately seeking the gift in everything. And I think, you know, it's funny that you pulled that because that's what we've been trying to sort of, you know, pull out of this whole thing is searching for those silver linings. Obviously, we're not trying to minimize the grief or the terror or the very actual physical mortality that we're facing. But if we can cling to those silver linings, then we can definitely come out of this having learned something, which is all we can possibly hope for. Amanda, I'm so looking forward to your final thoughts. Do you have any message for our listeners? If you take this platform,
I just want to say that I appreciate the space you carved out for us to have a conversation like this, and that reading was really beautiful. It feels like that is your role in the context of creating this podcast as a conduit or facilitator of sharing gifts and knowledges of different ways of thinking and, you know, the dematerialization of these rigid structures that we once had, and, you know, thinking of a new way, a new option, giving and sharing voices of people that have been erased or have gone missing. We have missing and murdered Indigenous women in Two-Spirit. We also have the continuum of that of who else is missing in the conversations globally and in values and beliefs. And I don't know, I really appreciate being asked the questions and feeling the sweetness of having my opinion matter in this. When, you know, I like to speak up for people that, you know, have been silenced, as a person who has also been silenced. And I think maybe that's something that we all share in common, that our opinions and our beliefs, we're all valuable we're not disposable, and that we're all important and we're collective, we're all the same. And as much as we look at the other in the collective of these rigid value systems that harm, even though we're incarnated into a body today that wants to fight for the good, where I think like there is this, like this saying that we're only as good as our weakest link. And we're all, whether we're in this, whether we frame ourselves as a healer, or like someone that wants to fight for the greater good, or is a warrior for justice, we're also the villain. We're also the demon. We're also intrinsically tied to the resonance of the collective wound. And it's all our job to bring that to light and bring that journey forward. And that's heavy and dark. And a lot of people who are doing their shadow work are looking at, where do I fit in this bigger puzzle of things? And sometimes we really want to deny our shadows because they hurt and they're painful, or we just can't see them, it's too dark. And in our lifetime, sometimes we'll never resolve what that thing is that we came here to do. And we're on a journey of soul remembrance, or remembering who we were before materializing. And we're, that connection is the root of wellness, like we're saying, that spirituality is a connection of wellness. So when we acknowledge that our inner voice is always tied to nature and the cosmos, and they're all talking to one another, you realize that we hold the key to the collective good. And for us to overcome this hurdle, we all have that gift.
Yeah, I definitely believe that this collective wound that you mentioned is like, is healed one conversation at a time, whether that's our conversation here tonight, or that conversation between you and the motion of the planets, or that conversation between the soil and the seed. These are these conversations and storytelling, like you were saying, this like oral tradition, and then the more personal releasing of your own story is such a healing. And hearing, I know when I listen to podcasts and I hear somebody else saying something that resonates with me, it that heals me too. When I hear somebody and I think to myself, that's what was happening when I was thinking this or feeling this. So yeah, I feel we heal this collective wound one conversation at a time. And hopefully that's what we're doing always.
And vulnerable yeah. with each other. I think too, there, what was I gonna say? The peace that I feel in being part of that mission, that we're all here and we're chosen here in this time, it's because we all have a role to play in what happens in the next few years and what happens in the generations to come. And for some reason, we're alive in this time and we're influencing that. And so the peace that I feel, even though we're all succumbed to the reality of what mortality is, the thread that connects us together is that story of how we bring that forward for what's to come next. And if, and I feel like, I don't know, like there's a serenity in knowing that even if life is short, or there are devastating losses in my personal life that caused me grief, to know that I did my best in this time to, you know, bring that unheard voice, or to bring that change where our playing field
is more even and fair, or the collective wound can begin to heal as a group of us. It keeps me out of that material anxiety and worry of, you know, hoarding, like this idea of like hoarding our vitality in the stupid shit like toilet paper.
Because you can't eat toilet paper.
No.
Michelle, do you want to play us out, my darling? Can you play us out?
Yes. So I'm going to sing Navy Wabo, and I find Navy Wabo to be a good song to end on. It's a water honoring song. It's Anishinaabe. Well, sometimes you'll hear it's Anishinaabe, sometimes you'll hear it's Algonquin, but like, so the teaching I received when I learned the song was, it's not like a drumming song. It's something that you'll normally hear with like a rattle, or more traditionally it would be like sticks, because back when ceremonies were banned, because like they took away everything. They took away crafts, took away the drums, they took away like all the instruments. So we got innovative and used sticks. But I'm going to be using my drum bag. And my drum bag, you guys can see, I have jingle cones.
So maybe you'll send me a picture of it so I can put it in the show notes so everyone can see what it looks like at home.
Yes, I will.
Boom.
So I use jingle cones, and jingle cones are used on jingle dresses, which are to promote healing as well. So I hope it's not going to be too loud.
I'm sure it's going to be healing.
How's this, like, can you hear this part?
Oh, yes.
Is it too loud?
Not for me.
Okay. So it goes, Navy Wabo, and I am Akinisku, Navy Wabo. Hey ya, hey ya, hey ya, hey. Hey ya, hey ya, hey ya, ho. Needy wobble and I am Akinisku, needy wobble. Hey ya, hey ya, hey ya, hey. Hey ya, hey ya, hey ya, ho.
Thank
I
you.
Hope I didn't sound bad.
No, you sounded amazing. That was great. That was great. And it felt good to listen to. Thank you so much, Michelle. And thank you so much, Amanda. And I know you'll both hit me up anytime you have another story to tell.
Oh, definitely.
Good. Thank you so much, Amanda. Thank you so much, Michelle. Please stay well, stay mighty, take care of yourselves. And hopefully we can all take care of our community together.
Yeah. Until next time.
Until next time. Just let me know. You know I love your stories. You hit me up.
We need to have like a gathering. We need to have a gathering when this whole like thing is finished.
I'm inviting all of you, and that goes for you listening at home too. When we can have a party, you're all invited.
You must be a witch.